Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Barry Jernigan, and we're going to talk a little bit about his family and his research. So welcome, Barry. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I think you know I love this stuff. So
yeah, me
too. So Jernigan's not an Italian name, right? So
no.
Who in your family is the Italian?
My mom. My mom's dad, both of his parents were born in Italy, so that's where it comes from.
Do you know what part of Italy?
From Piemonte, from the province of Torino, in the north, Nord Italia, up by the Alps, in the Canavesi region, but also in the city of Torino as well.
Oh, so now that's interesting, because most people that I talk to are from the south. So it's good to get a northerner every once in a while to get that perspective. So now, do you know why they came?
I don't really know exactly why they came. It was probably about 1880, so I'm not sure exactly what was going on. I would say probably poverty, like a lot of the people there. I would say they worked in the coal mines in Illinois. So, they were probably looking for a better life, and eventually they either bought restaurants or farms, and then, kind of progressed that way after they worked in the mines.
So that's cool. So that's early,
mm-hmm.
too. You know, the 1880s were early, and I mean, I would have to guess that maybe they did some kind of mining, you know, over in Italy or something like that. Since they are from a mountainous area, they probably gravitated towards that.
They could have, yeah. I think most of them were contadino or campagnuolo. They were farm laborers, you know, wherever they were for the most part. Most of them were not tradesmen. You know, that was what they did there.
Well, you know, when I did an interview, I guess 6-8 months ago or something like that, with a couple of guys who wrote a book about Italians who were swindled to New York. And it was around
same
time frame.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, it was around that same time frame. And, it may have just been one of those things where they got to New York and they needed the help. They needed workers somewhere, you know, in the Midwest, and stuck them on a train and sent them.
it could be. Now, there was a lot of Piemontese in the same area in Illinois. I mean, if you look in the census in Coal City and Braidwood and the village of Torino, which no longer exists, there were a lot of Piemontese that lived there, a lot of relatives. You see the same names in Frascosano in the records there, and in Pertusio that you see in Spring Valley, Bureau County, Illinois, and in Coal City and Braidwood. You see a lot of those same names over and over again. So I think a lot of them came from the same area. And it could be that maybe there was something like that going on where, you know, they were tricked into coming, you know, for the, you know, to the land of milk and honey for a better life. And they bought it. You know, it could be. I don't really know exactly why they came or, you know, the details around that.
Or maybe a couple came.
Mm-hmm.
You came, and then they started sending for people and said, well, there's work here, and, you know, because that's, you know, sort of like a chain migration thing or something like that.
Yeah. Now, I know one of my great-grandfather's brother, Charlie, he was an agent that arranged for people to come from Italy. I do know that. He was a postmaster there in Illinois, and he was also an agent. He was kind of a bigwig there, Charles Valerio. So,
So that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was helping to bring people over.
Yeah. They were working with the ship lines and things like that to bring people over. Yeah. He was definitely involved in that. I've read
and
that.
So that must have been later. That must have been, maybe the 1900s, early 1900s.
It may have been. I know in the 1880 census, they don't appear, but by 1900, they're there. So somewhere in there. But I think somebody had said on one of the census, I think it says like 1881 or 1880 for the time that they emigrated to America in the in the census. I did see that. So sometimes that's not exact, but you know, you have to look I haven't found them in the passenger lists on ancestry.com. I have a full subscription to ancestry.com and I've looked in the passenger list there. I didn't find them. I found my great grandmother.
Yeah, well, that would have been before Ellis Island. So who knows? Now, so they went to Illinois. They stayed in Illinois. You said they opened up restaurants and things. So that's interesting to me because I like food and I love cooking here. So. But everybody has a restaurant story. I love that.
Yeah, taverns and restaurants. In the village of Torino, my great-grandfather, Giovanni Ignazio Valeriano, changed his name to George Ignatius Valerio later on. But he and Charlie started what they called the Valerio Hall, where they had different events. They had opera. They had contests like beauty contests and things like that. And they also had a tavern. When the village of Torino, I think in 1925 or somewhere, or 1922, something like that, it was closed down, and they moved that building to Coal City, and it was called the Alhambra, and it was there for a long time. I think the building is still there in Coal City, Illinois, but that was a tavern, and then I think there was a restaurant attached to it, or something like that, that one of the other relatives had. But a lot of them bought farms in the area and mostly did farming. But the Ignazio, he ran a saloon for quite a number of years, actually.
Yeah, so I don't know much. The only thing I know about Illinois is Chicago, because I used to go there a lot. So in reference to Chicago, where is Coal City? And
It would be, I think, like to the west and south, Grundy County, Morris. If you know where Morris is, that's Grundy County, Illinois. Joliet is a little bit to the south and the east from Coal City. So like if you go south in the highway and then you head east, you'll be into Joliet. So it's in that area.
Well, Joliet, I know because of the Blues Brothers. So
yeah, Joliet. So there was a lot of Italian Piemontese people that settled in Joliet. Braidwood, if you know where Braidwood is, near Joliet, a little bit west and a little bit north is where Coal City is from there. So there's that general area. Torino, the village of Torino was, I think, kind of a little bit east of Joliet. Maybe a little bit north and east of Joliet, still in Will County. The village of Torino. There's a nuclear cooling lake there now where the village of Torino used to be.
And that's interesting. So they came and it sounds like they started their own village and gave it an Italian name.
Yeah, it was a coal mine. I think the coal mine was like under the village, actually.
Really?
So that's where they were. So like a lot of coal mines in that area, they just collapsed it basically, and then they put a lake in there. There's quite a lot of, I've seen a number of lakes in that area that used to be coal mines, and they just like blew, I guess they blew them up or whatever, and they filled them with water. So you got these lakes now where there used to be coal mines.
Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So growing up, I mean, did you grow up, was it an Italian enclave when you were growing up?
Not really. No, my dad was from Alabama. And my mom's mom, her name was Southcombe, and they were from Morris. So there was my mom was born in Braceville in Grundy County, Illinois. So it was kind of a mixed family. I think what happened in that area of Illinois when the Piemontese first came, they mostly married other Piemontese, but then later on. They started marrying other Italians and other people as long as they were Catholic, they would marry them. And then after a while, they started marrying other cultures from other religions. So they just kind of settled in and into the great melting pot of America, and they just all mixed together. So by the time she came along, I think it was pretty much just like American. You know, they were just basically American.
Yeah.
They were no longer Italian in that area. I mean, there were some people that still probably spoke Italian. My great-grandmother, Ida Fanolio Godot, she spoke Italian all her life. So I remembered her a little bit. She died in 1976 in Joliet, but she lived in the same house in Coal City for years and years. And we did visit her. I do remember her somewhat when we were kids. I was born in 1960, so she died when I was like 15 or 16 years old.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. Yeah, well, and, you know, that's true. But, you know, back then, you know, I'm probably a generation ahead of you or so, at least my grandparents. In my mom's family, everybody married an Italian except for my youngest uncle.
Yeah.
And in my father's family, everybody married an Italian except for my oldest uncle. So go figure that out. But they lived in this Scotch Plains, New Jersey, which in the 20s was probably the middle of nowhere. And there probably were no Italians. I still don't know how they wound up there. They eventually got back to New York and then to, you know, Corona and Whitestone and places like that. But, that must have been a real culture shock for my grandparents when their oldest son wanted to marry a non-Italian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was some of that, I think, in our family. I heard some comments that Nona had made about, her grandson marrying one of her grandsons marrying somebody who was not Italian. And there was a little bit of a comments made about that. I do remember hearing that. Yeah.
So have you gone back to Italy? Have you been back to Italy?
I have never been there. No, I do have a distant cousin that I got on Find a Grave and looked in the cemetery listings. And I contacted someone who put a memorial on Find a Grave, and he's from Pertusio, and he's a distant cousin on the Valero side. Now, Valero and Valerio are different; they're not the same family. And he's his last name is Balato, and he lives in Pertusio. And I did contact him, so I do have some connections there. And then there are the Fanolio Godò family; they still live in Prascrasano. And some of my mom's cousins have been in contact with them, and that they went over there and stayed in the house in Prascrasano. So now we have some connections. I just have never been there yet. We've never been to Italy yet. So yeah, probably in the future we probably will go. I would say it's probably
you have to go.
Probably a bucket. It's probably a bucket list thing to do. You know, I would say.
Yeah, you have to go, especially if you know somebody or you know where their hometown is. It changes your life. It really does.
Yeah, that's what you've said to other people. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. It sounds like a great time, you know. So maybe a bit of a shock to get that much attention from all the people in the town here. You say that was like, oh my God, that's going to be interesting. But yeah. I'm looking forward to eventually.
And they love to see us.
That's what you said. You know,
it's truly an experience. That's for sure. Yeah. So you said you have the whole thing on Ancestry. Mm-hmm. You found anything interesting with either your DNA or stories or connections that you had no idea about?
Yeah. In fact, I recently I've been doing a lot of research, mostly on family searches, where I find most of the documents. Mm-hmm. And in the city of Torino, they're in French and Italian and Latin. And in the other places in where I look in the Comune, they're in Italian and Latin. So I've had to refresh my French from high school and then learn Italian, actually, to get into the documents and really get into the nitty-gritty. So I'm taking an online Italian course to get better at that. And then I had to, on Google Translate, I use that for most of the Latin to figure that out. But I mostly use Family Search. Ancestry DNA, Mom and I both tested on Ancestry DNA. And yeah, we found some genetic connections there. And I'm helping some people with some of their research as well.
And any surprises in the DNA from where you came from or where you thought you
might
come from?
I already knew Prescrozano, so and Pertusio. There was a woman that lived in the city of Torino. I think she's passed away now, but I haven't had connections with her for a long time. But she actually found some things for me over there, in that my great-great-grandfather may have been an abandoned infant. See, the family name in America was Valerio. So he was named Guglielmo Valeriano when he came to America. He changed his name to William Valerio. He was my great-great-grandfather. My great-grandfather was born Giovanni Ignazio Valeriano in Prascrozano, but he changed his name to George Ignatius Valerio. But Guglielmo Valeriano was born in the city of Torino. He lived in Prascrozano for his adult life, but when, as a child, he was born in the city of Torino as Valeriano Guglielmino. But he was an abandoned infant. He was born in 1825, in April 18th, 1825. And I found his actual birth record in the city of Torino records on Family Search. But shortly after his birth, he was abandoned. He was an abandoned infant. And I found in what they call the allegati, or the attachment to his marriage document to my great-great-grandmother, Caterina Henrietto. They were married in Prascrozano in 1868. And they, when they got married, they attached other records, like their birth records, to prove they were old enough to get married, that they weren't, if they were married before, the death record of the, you know, the widow, the person that died, the previous spouse, things like that. And in his allegati, there is no actual birth record because he didn't really have one that they knew of, but they do have the information that he was an abandoned infant, and his number that was that attached to him as an abandoned infant, and some of the families he was placed with after his birth. So that's in that marriage record, and it says April 18th, but it says 1821. Mm-hmm. But as you know, a lot of the dates are incorrect in the document. So you really have to go looking for a span of dates. So that's what I did. I went into the records in the city of Torino and I found in 1825 his actual birth date. But it says April 18th, so I'm sure that's him. I mean, it's too much of a coincidence. I mean, that he was an abandoned infant with a number in the allegati, and he was born in the maternity hospital in the city of Torino. It says that in the allegati in Prascrozano, and then there it is, you know, April 18th. It's just the wrong year, and his name was changed. So, but I'm sure it's him. I mean, it's the too many coincidences to say, oh, that's another guy that just happens to have the same name.
Yeah,
I think it's him. So,
and that, and that's, you know, that's so interesting that they did that. Again, I did an interview with somebody who did a whole thing about the you know, the children of the wheel. You know,
whether
at the church and everything. And sometimes people will come back and claim them. They would leave a little ribbon or a little something in the pocket or something.
Wow.
So if they ever wanted to come back, they could say, I dropped off the baby 6 years ago and it had the Saint medal, or it had a blue ribbon, or something like that.
Wow, that's interesting.
And one very interesting child that was abandoned was in Italy, he was Giovanni Martino. And here he was John Martin.
Oh, yeah.
He was the bugler with Custer.
I read that story. Yeah.
Great story.
I read that. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was an abandoned child. And apparently his father did try to come and claim him. And he didn't, by that time, he didn't want anything to do with him. And he came to America and joined the army.
Yeah.
And I think it was, I think there were seven Italians with Custer in the 7th Cavalry.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I only know about that one guy.
Yeah, there were seven, and they all got killed except for him, because they sent him with a message to, you know, the other general, colonel, whatever.
Right, yeah.
And he survived because he wasn't there, obviously. You know, he was sent with a message. But yeah, interesting. And he was abandoned in Italy. So it's, you know, very interesting story there.
Yeah.
So now have you researched your dad's family?
The Alabama family. Yeah. I researched some of them. That is an interesting thing because when I did my Y chromosome test, I didn't match any of the other guys named Jernigan.
Really?
So, yeah. And then somebody told me, well, you can put like a general match to see who you do match. And I matched all these guys named Chandler. So then I ended up joining the Chandler Family Association. In fact, I eventually was the deputy chairman for the genealogy panel. We helped other people with their research. So all these other people are in the Chandler Family Association genealogy database, lineage database, but I couldn't get in there because I couldn't find the actual brick, you know, the connection, you know, to the Chandler. I don't know what it is. So I know back to my great-great-grandfather, James Silas Jernigan, who was born in probably in Gunnersville, Marshall County, Alabama, or maybe he was born in Tennessee. We're not really sure. And I even went to Gunnersville and tried to find, you know, the smoking gun, but I couldn't find it in any of the documents. I looked in all the land records and everything, the probate records, and just nothing, you know. But a lot of the Alabama records, the difference between American records and Italian records, this is why I love Italian records, as you know, they are so full of information. I don't know if they were just nosy about everybody or the authorities wanted to know every little detail or what the deal was, but...
it was because of Napoleon, so it was probably...
It could be, I guess, but even...
He wanted to know everything about everybody, probably. I could only guess.
Yeah, it could be. It could be that it was the Napoleonic Code, that maybe that's why, because they followed that. But like in Alabama, it's like, well, everyone knows Mary is his daughter. There's no reason to put her husband's name in this. You know, they're just like, everyone knew who they were. They weren't thinking that hundreds of years later, some genealogists were going to try to find out these people.
The other thing that makes it easy for the Italian is that the women keep their name.
Exactly, yeah. They keep their maiden name.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, they've got their fathers and sometimes their fathers and their mother's names and their ages and their occupations. And if they were born in a different town, they have that. Yeah, I just love staying in Italian documents. So I just stay there because you get results. You know, I recently found my first sixth great grandfather, you know. So I'm not now back to at least one sixth great grandparent. I've actually found his name in a document. So. You know,
so now you don't know how the name Jernigan came about?
I believe that it what they call a non-paternal event, an NPE. So either a man named Chandler had a relationship with a woman and then he died or they were never married or whatever the deal was, and then she married somebody else whose name was Jernigan. And then the child was just named, you know, James Silas Jernigan. I believe James Silas Jernigan's father's surname was probably Chandler. I think that's where the connection is. I just don't know who he was, you know.
Yeah. That would make sense. Yeah, either was that a wedlock or something, or she used her name, or
yeah. I have no idea. So
back then, I don't think they worried too much about adoption papers or anything like that. She may have had
no.
They just.
Yeah, they just did it on their own, and that was it. I don't think there was a lot of things that. It's interesting because the records, the probate records in that area in Alabama, were called orphans' court records. So, but I think a lot of the orphans were just created on their own. They didn't really have an orphanage, I don't think. But that was what it was created for.
We'll be right back.
Have you ever wondered what the band AC/DC has to do with the missing town of Doveland, Wisconsin? Or who gets to decide what music plays at the end of the world? Or whether or not the largest unsolved art heist in history was actually a cover for a different crime? Maybe you haven't wondered about these things, but that's okay. On 31, we dive into strange, true, but often lesser-known stories and the interesting theories that surround them. From space to sports, lost media to internet lore, 31 has something for everyone. Find 31 on your favorite podcast platform and dive into the why behind the weird with me, Quinn Lovecraft. 31, the why behind the weird.
Yeah, so did you find anything back with the Chandlers? How far back they go? I'm assuming they go back pretty far, yeah?
Well, the Chandlers, I think they were Chandler, and they probably came over with William the Conqueror, I think, from Normandy. I think that's what they probably figure. And, of course, in England, it wasn't until like the 12 or 1300s they started actually using surnames. So prior to that, only some of the nobility actually had any kind of title, you know, like a surname. Or a lot of times in Normandy, they were named after the castle, wherever the castle was situated in the town that they had the manor, that basically they were, you know, William's knights, basically. And then when they came over to England and he gave them land in England, they took it away from the Anglo-Saxons and gave it to his Norman and Breton. And Jernigan, I think, is actually Breton. So I think that's actually a Breton name. So I think that was also Jernigan. I mean, if you say it in French, you know, Jernigan, I mean, it even sounds French, you know.
It does, yeah. Yeah.
So, and I think that that was also one of the knights of, probably the knight of Alan of Brittany, probably had a knight named Jernigan that he gave land to in Northumbria. So, yeah, I think that was probably what happened. They were Normans.
Yeah, I could actually, I could trace back to William the Conqueror through Rollo.
Wow. Oh, Rollo. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, believe it or not. Yeah. I did an interview with, I spoke to him before I did the interview. A guy named Kai White. He's in Texas, and he's really big on the Crusades. He's written books about them, and he does charts through Gateway Ancestors back to England. So if you have a Gateway ancestor and you can get back to England, he does these awesome, really awesome charts. He doesn't do your typical grandparent, you know, type of chart. He traces back the noble roots. So I found him, and I said, you know, I have Italian nobility through this Caracciolo family, and this was my third or fourth great-grandfather, and can you do me a chart? And he said, well, I don't know. I've never done an Italian before. At least I do Americans. I don't. So he said, but give me the name. Give me what you know, and I'll check it out. And if I can, I'll do it. So sure enough, he was able to do it, and he came back, and he said, yeah, I could do it. It's my third or fourth great grandfather, maybe fifth, Ambrogio Caracciolo. And through him, he was able to do this chart and, you know, trace me back to Rollo. I just reposted my Is Ragnar Real post, because he wasn't, at least probably wasn't real.
Rollo wasn't real?
No, Rollo was real.
Oh.
Ragnar wasn't.
Oh, Ragnar.
Ragnar wasn't.
Yeah.
Ragnar's
son. Like a Norse god or something, wasn't he?
There's different stories about it, that he was two or three different people, maybe. He just mythical, totally, like King Arthur type of guy.
Oh, like King Arthur, yeah.
Yeah. But his sons, Ragnar's sons were real. At least the people that were attributed to being his sons.
Yeah.
And Rollo had nothing to do with Ragnar.
Yeah.
From my research. But he was the first Duke of Normandy.
I have a copy of Burke's. There was it's a used copy from like the 1950s. It's like this thick, you know. And it has all those charts. I've looked at all those about the Dukes of Normandy and the Counts of Anjou and all that. Yeah, I've looked at all of that. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I have some Anjou in me, and I have some Capet, and I have Valois. I have some Valois in me.
Valois. They all intermix with each other. Yeah, that was.
Well, yeah, there were so many intermarriages back then, you know, for political reasons.
Oh yeah, that's how they got land. That's how they got, you know, territory and soldiers and, you know, commerce and everything else that came with that. Oh yeah, that's how they did it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, through my research through those families, you know, I never realized before unification about all these Italian cities, and you know, almost every city was its own little fiefdom, and these people were warring for hundreds of years back and forth and trading properties and giving towns of dowries and things like that.
Yeah,
much more so than probably, you know, France and England and Spain.
Yeah, I've heard there was a lot of poison being sold in Italy, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then daggers. Yeah, there was, I think, a lot of more of that going on. In England, it was just like, you know, what they called judicial executions, I guess, or things like that. Or, you know, there was, I mean, if you read English history, to me, it reads a lot like organized crime. I mean, it really does. If you look at English history, and I've seen some of these documentaries, I find that very fascinating to look at the situation. To the point that just because you were a noble doesn't mean that, you know, that your lifespan was going to be any longer than a peasant, because you could get a dagger in the back just as easily as they could get a, you know, a disease or something, you know. So
and I have a lot of that. I have evidence of that in my family. One of the interesting things I found, I think it was the Orsini family.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going through it, and I see this guy was the justice, right? But
mm-hmm.
really back then, the justice was really the guy who signed the death penalty, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
He was the executioner.
Yeah.
And so then I see his father was the executioner, and his father was the executioner, and his, mm-hmm. so five generations of this one family,
wow,
father, the son, you know, the grandson, they were all the executioners for like 100 years in this, I forget where it was exactly, but I was like, this was like the family business or something. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Someday, son.
Yeah, someday, son, you'll inherit the execution job. But to your point, there were a lot of poisonings, and there were a lot of, you know, father against son.
Oh, yeah.
You know, cousin against cousin, brother against brother.
Yep. There's a rumor that Charles I actually caused the death of James in order to gain the throne. I've heard that, you know.
Yeah. I've heard that also.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and I'm trying. I still haven't found that. There's one person who I know is an expert about Italian nobility, and I haven't been able to get him to talk to me yet. Or maybe someday. But it's so hard to find even an expert.
I know. We have Faletti ancestry in Pertusio, and I've gone back as far as my fifth great-grandfather, Stefano Faletti, from the death record of my fourth great-grandmother, Giovanna Maria Faletti. And it's in Latin, but it says his name, Stefani Faletti. There were Falettis who were of the nobility.
Yes, that rings a bell, that name.
Yeah. But I don't know if we were from that family or not, because I can only find back to him. I mean, he died probably sometime before 1823, and the records, the online records in Pertusio, they start in 1823. And I did ask my distant cousin in Pertusio if maybe he could go to the church and find records. He said right now there is no priest for the church. Yeah. So I guess it's closed there in Pertusio, the Church of San Lorenzo. In Pertusio. So yeah, I was hoping maybe he could find Stefano's death record and you know, send me what it says, and then I would translate it and find, you know, further back, and maybe we could find Faletti nobility. I know there's a distant cousin who visited Italy, and he went to the castle, and he says relative, she told me that there was a picture on the wall. They looked just like him, and it was one of his ancestors. They were saying, yeah, you are, you know, from this family. You know, he was just visiting the castle as a tourist. You know, he didn't know it was his Faletti, but apparently it was. And so apparently there's a distant connection to the nobility, supposedly, but I don't know what it is. So.
Yeah, I don't know did you ever see the picture of me with my eighth great-grandfather?
Yeah, the one that you've done. Yeah, that is clever. I like
that. Isn't that crazy, though?
Yeah, yeah.
Because and how I found that was I found it online. I found his picture, and I looked at it and I said, you know, I have a photo that's about the same age.
Yeah,
and there's a resemblance for sure. And, you know, it was a color photo, so I made it black and white, so it looks a little bit, you know, more. And I showed it to my, because my wife would be the first one to tell me, you know, you're crazy.
Yeah.
I showed it to my wife, and she said, oh, my God, you look like him. but he had a little bit more money than I have. So.
Yeah.
And now his son, Francesco Bambino, owned much of today's Campania.
Wow.
That's how rich these people were. That's how
powerful
and everything they were. And, you know, they intermarried a lot with the Spanish. And, you know, because the Spanish, when they took over, they didn't take over all these little – they left the nobles there. I mean, they left things in place. They were smart, I guess, leaving things in place. Mm-hmm. You know, unification did away with all of that too quick and just ruined the whole country, especially the South.
Yeah.
As you guys from the North took over and
you know, the Dukes of Savoy were the kings of Piedmont and Sardinia. Yeah, they became the kings of Italy. Exactly. Yeah. It's our fault. Yeah.
And they decimated the South. But you know, and that was the other thing that that amazed me when we were there, and you know, we went to some of these ancestral homes. The people still. They still talk about these nobles, and they still revere them, and they're still in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly incredible.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that. You would think that I know in England it's not like that. You know, it's in there's some people in England today that are really still bitter about the nobility and all of that. Of course, they still have some of that. You know. Some of the dukes and earls, etc. They still have those titles, and
I asked the question. I said, you know, why do they still remember these people? And they said, because for the most part, not every place, but for the most part, they were very good to the people.
Yeah,
they gave them agriculture, they gave them land, they supported the church. Pretty much almost on their own in a lot of these places. They gave the money to the church. They built the churches. They gave the vestments. They did all of these things.
Right.
So, they still have this remembrance of them.
Yes, good.
Later. Yeah. And the other thing that blew me away, and especially in Calabria, in the town we went to, was they still... that we went on this picnic and they still made the food themselves. The cheese, the wine, the olive oil, everything was all made right there, fresh.
Wow.
No preservatives,
no
list of crap.
Yeah, exactly. I can't eat that because I'm allergic to something in there. So, exactly.
And everything was so great and fresh and everything. So,
good.
But so the moral of the story is you got to get there at some point in time. You'll love it. You'll definitely love it.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm not sure if these towns are quite that small though. Parascrosano, I think, is kind of a bigger area now, and Valperga, which is near there, we have ancestry there as well, is even bigger than that. So I mean, in 1823 in Valperga, there were over 100 birth records. There were over 100 baptisms. Just in 1823, so you can imagine.
Yeah, but you know, it doesn't matter because you'll be still walking the streets that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
From and that, you know, when we were in Naples, you know, Naples is huge. But just knowing, being in the old town and by the Duomo, and knowing that, you know,
that's the feeling I got in Gunnersville when I was there. Yeah, this is my family. You know, walk these streets. You know, that is a neat feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, the
family stomping ground. Yeah, definitely.
And everything is just, you know, so old. I mean, you know.
Yeah, like a story you were telling about some guy who was in some place, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm your uncle," or something. Like, he's real nonchalant. Like, "Yeah, I know who you are." That was so funny.
Oh yeah, that was I forget his name.
I forgot exactly what it was, but it was
that was one of the people I interviewed. Yeah, he went to the town and he was sitting there and he looked over.
The
guy was playing cards or something, and he's he went over to him and said, "Yeah,
I know you are. Big deal, so what?"
But when I met my dad's first cousins over there, I can't even explain it. Because nobody ever talked about it. I had no idea. I had no clue.
Right. Yeah.
Believe it existed.
Yeah, and you said they had photos from America, I guess somebody sent them photos.
They had my parents' wedding photo with my grandmother's handwriting on the back.
Yeah.
So just imagine, I go to this place, I didn't even know where I was going. My cousin Nicola took me there. He didn't say where we were going or who we were gonna meet. And then they introduced them and with talking and they start taking out these pictures, and the first picture they pull out is my parents' wedding picture.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know.
They might have photos in Paris Cresado. I don't know. Out of Bertuzio, you know. Now, I don't think that my distant cousin in Bertuzio has not said, oh, yeah, I have photos of, you know, your mother. I don't think he's – he sent me photos of his family, but he didn't say they had any photos of us, so – I don't think he even knew who I was.
And then, a couple of months after we got back, he sent me pictures that my grandmother sent over there 100 years ago to her father.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, we're blessed in that we have the internet. We can make connections like that. Well, listen, Barry, this is great. I'm glad we finally were able to get
got connected. I know.
It took
a bit. My being technologically challenged, I think, is the biggest hurdle to get over. but you helped me through it. So I thank you.
Yeah, we got there. We got there.
Grazie mille.